Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Mo H. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Northern California. And today is Tuesday, September the 4th. This is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book and we are on page 104, starting a new chapter, Chapter 8, Two Wives, starting with the first paragraph, with few exceptions, our book, through five paragraphs ending with themselves once more. And the comments will be on all five paragraphs. And today's readers are the 12 Steps, Kelly F., the 12 Traditions, Carol H., and the readers of the text are Sherry K.B., John K., and Terry H. And the share ID for Monday, September the 3rd, 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 11,868. That is 11868. And for Tuesday, today, September 4th, the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 11,870. That's 11870. And our newcomer greeter will be Melanie C. All right, OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition, states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who recover from compulsive overeating can recover, people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Kelly F. to read the 12 steps of OA.
Thanks, Mo. Good morning. This is Kelly F., recovered compulsive overeater from Southern California. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for His knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you. Pass.
Thank you, Kelly F., and I will now ask Carol H. to read the 12 traditions.
Good morning, Mo. This is Carol H., recovered in Colorado. Thank you for your service today. These are the 12 traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you, Carol H. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinent requirement for sharing on the topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone again. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 108, chapter 8, Two Wives, starting with a few exceptions, our book, and reading through 5 paragraphs, ending with our loved ones would be themselves once more. And I now ask Sherry KB to get us started.
Good morning, Mo. Good morning, everybody. It's Sherry KB in Northern California. Very grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. Chapter 8, To the Wives. Two Wives. With few exceptions, our book thus far has spoken of men, but what we have said applies quite as much to women. Our activities in behalf of women who drink are on the increase. There is every evidence that women regain their health as readily as men if they try our suggestions. But for every man who drinks, others are involved. The wife who trembles in fear of the next debacle, the mother and father who see their son wasting away. Among us are wives, relatives, and friends whose problems has been solved, as well as some of us who have not yet found a happy solution. We want the wives of Alcoholics Anonymous to address the wives of men who drink too much. What they say will apply to everyone, nearly everyone, about by ties of blood or affection to an alcoholic. As wives of Alcoholics Anonymous, we would like you to feel that we understand as perhaps few can. We want to analyze mistakes we have made. We want to leave you with the feeling that no situation is too difficult and no unhappiness too great to be overcome. We have traveled a rocky road. There is no mistake about that. We have had long rendezvous with hurt, pride, frustration, self-pity, misunderstanding, and fear. These are not pleasant companions. and we have been driven to maudlin sympathy, to bitter resentment. Some of us veered from extreme to extreme, ever hoping that one day our loved ones would be themselves once more. Okay, let me put myself on a timer.
I got you.
So,
too.
This chapter says to wives, but it's also a chapter about relationships. And I thought it was really interesting because the first paragraph is addressing the evidence that maybe there are men who have, you know, obviously we're dealing with here with compulsive overeating, so we're looking at the opposite. But there's more history of women in OA than men, so we're doing the opposite here. We're addressing the men who are compulsive overeaters. That's the first paragraph it's talking about. And, you know, how many men, it must be really difficult to come into to OA, or for some they love it in a sense because all these women are in there. But to address their disease as a man in this in compulsive overeating. but it's saying that, you know, that there's you know, an answer here for you. And then the second paragraph, it talks about for every man who drinks, others are involved. And now it goes to this. It talks about the people who have wives or husbands or relatives that are troubled by and in fear of are eating, and or that, you know, we're wasting away, that our loved ones are watching us waste away into the food and into you know, oblivion. I know that's what I did. I would just waste away spending time by myself, eating myself to death with a fork. So they're addressing that as well. And then it's also talking about the wives and relatives who have had problems solved, that they're saying there are among us that things have been solved and that we have, and then there's some who have not found a happy solution. So there's a mix of us here. Of the people who have found happiness of our loved ones or who have watched us, you know, get recovered, and so they are, you know, feeling like they have found their problem solved. And then it's interesting because in the next paragraph, it's about addressing the recovered family of the compulsive overeater who is saying, we've been through this, we know what it's like. We want you to know there is a situation that's not too difficult and no unhappiness too great to overcome. And actually that was taken into another 12-step program, by the way, that really is one of the things that they say every time in a meeting. So what they're telling me here is that, you know, that the people that live with me who've dealt with my disease are that they can find happiness too, whether I'm eating or not. And that they understand what you've been through with the self-pity, the misunderstanding, and the fear. And, wow, my time's running out. And I just want to say that I never, until I went through these steps, I didn't realize that my eating was contributing to the contamination of my relationships. I always thought it was about them when it was also about me as well. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Sherry KB. And for anybody who just came on the line, we're starting Chapter 8, page 104, Two Wives. The first paragraph, with few exceptions, our book through five paragraphs, with themselves once more, and we'll comment on all five. With those of you who'd like to share, I'll start taking your names.
Lisa J.R.
Lisa J.R. Quiet. Anyone else?
Erica A.
Erica A.
Marilyn T.
Marilyn T.
Julie P.
Julie D.
P.
Julie E.B.
I got it. Julie E.P. Julie E.B., yes. And a few more. All right, we'll stop there. I have Lisa J.R., Erica
Patty A. Patty
T. Connie, was that?
Patty. Patty T.
Patty T. Okay, I got you,
yes.
Patty.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, so I have Lisa J.R., Erica A., Marilyn T., Julie P., Julie E.B., and Patty T. So Lisa J.R., please get us started.
Good morning, everybody, and thank you all for being here. And moderator, thanks for your, you know, easygoing service. Just love it when you moderate.
thank you.
I used to think that, you know, nobody was affected by my eating issues until I got into the big book, until I saw that bakery boxes and cupcake wrappers were just a symptom. And I had to start dealing with the squirrel cage between my ears, that actually, you know, I ate over the things that made me eat, or that food settled down in my spirit. And, you know, and I think about it, and as an adult, I have been able to speak to my elderly parents when I made amends, and they've all been astonished at this shift in my character, this shift in, you know, my personality. And, you know, my brothers and sisters, some of them are heavy eaters, but I've been able to explain to them that I was a compulsive overeater most of my life, you know, and I started using food as a solution as a teenager. And they were all mystified because, you know, I was right in the middle of the spectrum. I was never rail thin, and I was never morbidly obese. I was always, you know, shifting between 20 and 30 pounds overweight. So they were left scratching their head until they could see the fruits of this program, you know, the promises fulfilled in my life, the way I deal with things, the way I speak to people, the way I consider people, others, over myself, and not in a martyr sort of a way, but just as a human being. It's just been an amazing transformation for my family. And all those years of denial that I didn't affect anyone, yes, you know, I had to make amends for the impertinence and the foul temper, because like every good pendulum, I swung from one extreme to the other during this disease. Those moments of clarity and those moments of happiness and peace were short-lived. When I swung back, I was like, I had almost like an avalanche effect in the lives of others, you know, with my mouth. I would open my mouth, and if I was displeased, I became a weed whacker. Boy, I cut the weeds down, but I cut the flowers down with it. And so gratefully working this program and embracing these other chapters that are often overlooked to wives, employers, family afterward, and learning how to relate and work in relationships has been such a blessing. And thank you all for being a blessing. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Lisa J.R. Erica A., followed by Marilyn T.
Hi, it's Erica. This chapter, this section is a little hard to read. I'm at the very beginning of all of this. I'm still in step one. And it's hard to read because I don't have a partner. And I find that, I mean, I don't want to, like, blame it on the food, but I want to say that I use the food to prevent myself from having, like, a partner or intimate relationship. So I just wanted to share that. Thank you.
Thank you, Erica T. I ran to do an errand, and I need to come back. Sorry. Erica A., it's Marilyn T., followed by Julie B.
Hi, this is Marilyn T. from Northern California, grateful, recovered compulsive overeater. That statement of switching for myself, of switching from recovering to recovered is, it's a difficult one at times. It's only been just a little, about a week and a half since I finished my steps. And this was, I haven't read this part, and this is what I'm looking forward to is reading, finishing verse 164 pages. And I like what Sherry Kibbe shared, that this chapter is about relationships. True, as the first person second person said, they didn't have relationships. I do not have a husband or partner, but I have family, and this is how I can relate to this as. I have family, and they have suffered. I especially know that my parents have suffered. They being normal eaters, they just don't understand. I know it was hard for my dad. He was just he's a man run on self-will, and he just couldn't understand why I just could not put it down and be done with it, exercise some willpower. I think our families all have dealt with our disease in different ways, but the way I can show that I have changed is patience, tolerance, love, and kindness. That is the way that I have changed. And I have had a very psychic, spiritual change. And that is how I can do a living amends, is to treat my family with love and respect that they've always deserved. And that when I was in my disease, I haven't always been able to grant them. My son also, I can cease fighting anyone or anything, and I can simply enjoy them for how they are and where they're at. That was something I have never been able to do in my disease. I always wanted to. They weren't following my script. I wanted to run the Maryland show, but that is not the way things are anymore. I have to accept all situations as they are, or I will not find peace. I have to be fit spirit condition every day to be able to be of service to my family. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Marilyn T. Julie P., followed by Julie E. B.
Hi, this is Julie P.
Hi, Julie.
Relationships. So I'm new to this, well, I'm new to vision, but I had some abstinence. And I went on a vacation for 8 days, and I had my food, and everything was good. And, you know, I was with a girlfriend of mine and her husband, and met some new family, and it was great, you know. And then I just went on a vacation with my brother and my husband, and they like to eat. It just flashed back to when I was younger, and it was all about, so what are we eating for breakfast? What are we eating for lunch? What are we eating for dinner? You know, and let me try to stay out of the blame thing here, which is my go-to. You'd eat if these crazy people were eating around you, too. But I totally lost it, you know. I don't want to be different. I don't want to feel different. I am definitely on step one still. I haven't worked through the steps in this program. To look at feeling good about myself and my abstinence and doing what I need to do for me. I'm still in that people-pleasing stage where it's like, oh, we have all this food, but you want to go out to dinner and eat stuff where I can't eat? Oh, and then they're like, well, you don't have to go. Well, okay, I'm just going to stay home in the hotel room by myself because you're going to go. I don't know. So anyway, I love vision. I wasn't going to get up, and I wasn't going to walk, and I wasn't going to listen to my meeting today because I had screwed up, you know. And what I know is I got to keep trying. I got to keep trying to do this, you know. I got to keep getting that contact with my higher power and through you guys and through the meetings. And listening to the hope on these lines, I hear you guys have recovered, you know, and have that neutrality. And I yearn for that these days. That soul sickness that makes me feel like I'm not a part of just rots throughout my whole life. And that's what I ate over. And so it was a good reminder that look at your relationships. I get totally lost in the food that once I start going, it's like, fine, you want me to eat? You know, and I hate doing that. Taking the poison and waiting for somebody else to die is not the solution anymore. So that's why I decided I'm going to get up. I'm going to go for my walk. I'm going to connect with God again. I'm going to listen to the meeting. I'm going to share
time
that I'm just glad that you guys are all here. Thank you. With that,
thank
I pass.
You. Yeah, thank you, Julie P. And Julie E.B., followed by Patty T. Good morning, Julie.
Hi, this is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered in Colorado. And the fact that this chapter exists is a miracle to me because I don't think when I was in the food, I hurt so many people, and most especially my family, my spouse who was patient, and my spouse who had to maybe even shut down to protect himself, my spouse, who would hear not just the food, but the emotional dysregulation, the spiritual rootlessness. I depended on other people, places, and things, the food, and also on my family to meet needs for care and protection and connection, direction, security, self-worth, that I can only really get from a higher power. And so when I'm in the food, I can barely imagine how I could get out. And I spend a lot of time and energy at the beginning just focusing on those first steps of getting out of the food. So if you're just starting, just stay there, because then as you go for a ride, if you get a big book sponsor and you get into this book, you learn to get down to the causes and conditions. And still, you don't have the power to fix everything around you, even those things you have broken and even yourself. But as you continue to work, as you continue to recover, as you do those amends, as you face the pieces of your life that are in shambles, and the relationships that have swung from extreme to extreme, you have an opportunity to try. And I like to, I mean, the fact, the reason I said this chapter is a miracle is because I always thought it was the other person's fault, my family's fault, the world's fault, my job's fault. And the fact that someone would get enough recovery to stop being self-centered and do the opposite, which is thinking of the needs of others and working for them, is why this chapter exists. The fact that Bill could get to the point where he could imagine that other people had needs and emotions and had gone through turmoil. And we might not be able to face that on day one. On day one, we might just need to be out of the food and progressing, and then out of our resentments and fears and harms and progressing, and then turning over our defects and progressing. And then as we live in 10 and 11 and 12, one of the greatest things I've found is that I start with some learning how to talk to people through outreach, learning about relationships with people I don't even know that are lovely in program. And then I begin, I'll wrap up, and then maybe with my coworkers, people I see more frequently. And it's kind of come into peace finally then with my family that I can work, just working towards closer and closer relationships as I keep recovering one day at a time. Thank you, God. And thanks for letting me share.
Yes, thank you, Julie E.B. And before we have Patty T., I'll just remind everybody where we are, because we're going to come up with our next round of speakers. We're on page 104, chapter 8, To the Wives, or Two Wives, the first paragraph, with few exceptions, our book, reading through five paragraphs, ending with themselves once more, and the comments will be on all five. Patty T., you are up, and then I'll take a new group of people.
Okay, hi, thank you, everybody. Welcome to our meeting today. Gosh, this is a great chapter. Just since I got abstinent this time, and that's only a few months ago, and got recovered and started using the big book as a manual and instructions for living, I had an epiphany of sorts with my therapist. And for the 6 years prior to that time, I had been lamenting to her in my self-centeredness about how no one saw me, how nobody could see me. And then one day, not long ago, maybe a month ago, I burst into tears, and she said, "What's the matter?" And I said, I just realized that everybody saw me. I was the only one who didn't see me. I was the only one oblivious of my behavior. I was the only one who was not conscious of what I was putting other people through. And I remembered specifically an old boyfriend who was angry at me one day, and he said to me, "You never argue. All you do is eat." And I just broke down, and I said, "You know, the thing is, I also never told him I loved him because of the fear of that he would reject it. I also never told other people how I felt about anything. I just shoved every feeling I had down with food. And, of course, that made a block. And I kept thinking it was other people. It was my family members who were holding me off, you know, at arm's distance. And it was actually me who was holding them away at arm's distance. Because the food was my comfort. The food was everything to me. And making that realization, I realized that, oh, there's still some amends I owe. You know, I hadn't thought about it before, but now I have the clarity to see that. And when it says, you know, there's every evidence that women regain their health as readily as men if they try our suggestions, I wholeheartedly believe that. Thank you for letting me share. I'll pass.
Thank you, Patty T. And I will now open the lines up for those of you who'd like to share on this, on our readings.
Gina R.
Nancy L.
Donna.
Tony N. A.
Oh, wait a minute.
Tony N. A.
R. Nancy L. Who's after Nancy?
Donna D.
Wendy M.
Donna D.
Tony N. A.
And who was that last one? I have Wendy M.
Tony N. A.
Once again?
Tony N. A.
Tony?
Yep.
Laura
Tony
P.
N. Tony N.
Laura C.
Bonnie M.
Bonnie M. I'll stop there. I know I missed somebody. Laura C. All right, let me tell you who I have. I have Gina R., Nancy L., Donna D., Wendy M., Tony N. A., Laura C., and Bonnie M. If I missed anybody, I apologize. Maybe we'll catch you at the end if we have time. All right, we'll start with Gina R., followed by Nancy L.
Good morning, Mo. This is Gina R., gratefully recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I live in Green Valley, Arizona. First, I am just excited that we're reading this. My involvement with this particular meeting started in 2016, and this is the first time that I recall us continuing on to read these particular chapters. So thank you to the Group Conscience for making that decision. When I read this, the very first time I was exposed to the Big Book back in 1985 when my husband went through AA, it made perfect sense to me. And so the last couple of years when the decision was made not to read it in this particular meeting, I really didn't think about it too much. But when I started actually taking people through the book and we would get to this point, and if they had had experience before of going through the work, it was interesting that some people just would stop here and then other people would go on. And when I went through the work, we didn't do this chapter. We just kind of stopped. So I think it's interesting that there's a variation there. And it's neither good or bad. It just is what it is. But I'm really glad we're doing it now. And where I am with it now, and this is a result of walking other people through it, is reading it first through, just reading it without any kind of filter that you're putting on yourself, and then doing it again with a couple of different filters. One is, if you are the spouse or the partner or whatever, try to put yourself in that position. And when I did that, it really helped what is called the 11th step prayer out of the AA 12 and 12, the prayer of St. Francis, come alive for me. It helped me understand that I can seek to comfort rather than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood. And so I think there are different ways of looking at this chapter depending on where we are in our step work and in our recovery. I do think it's interesting that as different 12-step fellowships have grown up in different addictions, I am not aware of any other Al-Anonic fellowships cropping up to address things. So I don't know if there's like a corollary for Al-Anon in OA. I don't think so. So I know my time is up, but I do know that people do attend Al-Anon, and that basically is what rose out of this chapter. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Gina R. Nancy L., followed by Donna D.
Thank you, Mo, and welcome newcomers. This is Nancy L. from Arizona. You know, I'm taken back to the part where I would think, I'm not hurting anybody. But when I look back at my family, especially when our children were young, and my husband and the kids would buy me something for my birthday or Christmas to wear. And I would take it out of the box, and their eyes were just all lit up, like I'm going to be really excited. And I probably had a look on my face, especially when I held it up to my side, you know, knowing there's no way I'm going to get into this. It hurt them, I believe. You know why? Because nobody said much of anything other than, oh, yeah, you can take it back, whatever. But, you know, as the years progressed, let's say the second year they gave me an outfit, and the third year, and then they just stopped. It just stopped. Nothing ever fit. And so, you know, for the next decade, Mom got either something to eat or perfume, whatever. But, you know, I just so sorry that I disappointed them like that. But thank God they can see their mom in recovery today. And without God, who knows where I'd be. And with that, I will pass. Thank you.
And thank you, Nancy L. We have Donna D., followed by Wendy M.
Hi, this is Donna B., as in boy.
Okay, thank you.
No problem. Calling from Denver, Colorado. I, too, was thinking about the prayer of Assisi. What I've recently come to learn about myself in really reading in the big book around step 11 and praying in the morning, at night, and all throughout the day is my questionable motives. When I grew up, it was made explicitly aware to me that I should be comparing myself to other people, that I should be looking at other young girls and young women and seeing how they were thinner than me and nicer to their mothers than me and wealthier than me. You know, there was a sort of explicit exercise of look at them and see what your feelings are. So although in the program for many years, it really took me a long time to be honest about my motives. I really believed that because I experienced so much pain from considering myself to be less than others, that the solution would be to be better than others. So I set about trying to experience abstinence, trying to experience recovery, really for the sole purpose of being better than my peers, of garnering admiration from others. And in my sick mind, if jealousy caused me so much pain, then I assume that envy from others would create joy and freedom for me. And I can tell you it does not work. It is a terrible way to live. And so I'm really at the beginning in terms of sincerely looking where I can be helpful to others, where I can be sincere about what can I bring, what can I bring, what can I bring, and beg God to free me of those self-seeking motives. And I'm grateful for the awareness. I do think it is a significant cause and condition of my disordered eating and my disordered relationships with others. And I pray that from this awareness, I can really commit myself to be of service to others, not so that I can make them like me, or not so that I can, I don't know, be some kind of like, you know, put belt notches in my belt with how many people I've helped, but because my motive, my purpose for living, for existing, is not to be better than others, but to be really helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna B. Wendy M., followed by Tony Ann A.
Yes, good morning. Wendy M., gratefully recovered in Boulder, Colorado. Thank you, moderator, for your service and everyone on the line. And, of course, thank you, guys, for entire abstinence this morning. So relationships, right? So my story is the food is easy breezy compared to relationships with other human beings and relationship with myself. And my food is down. I'm entirely abstinent. Thank you, God. Food is a neutral experience for me. And people aren't yet, right? I haven't mastered the people thing yet. And the question that I ask myself is, what's running it? And so what runs me in relationships is the lie I tell myself, which is something's wrong with me. And if something is inherently wrong with me, if that's the lie.
Wendy M., press star 1 to unmute. We've lost you.
Shoot, I bet you can't hear me at all.
No, now
can
we
you
can.
Hear me at all?
You're back.
Okay, that was weird. So anyways, the bottom line is here is if I believe the lie something's wrong with me, I need you guys to be something that you're not to fill me, to fix me, to heal me from my wrongness, right? And so when I'm doing that, I'm in trouble in all my relationships, right? Because I need something from you. So I need to control you, right? So control, worry, fear, all of that self-seeking comes up because I need to manipulate you so you can fix me. So that's where I go with relationships. And the other piece that I ask myself is, what's it like to be them? So what's it like for my 13-year-old son to be with a mom who wants to be the child and making the kid the parent? What's it like for the boyfriend to have to be my therapist, my everything, my parent, my mother, my father? Like, what's it like for these folks, right? So as long as I'm believing that lie, that something's wrong with me, I'm absolutely going to just wreak havoc in my relationships. And when I go to God and know that I am a child of God and nothing's absolutely wrong with me, I'm complete. I'm already connected to that power. I'm good to go, right? I can do the 11-step prayer. I can be of service. I can say, I'm here to love. I'm here to give. I'm here to be of service. I'm here to understand. I'm here to be compassionate. When I'm in that power place, I am good to go. I am full of God's light, and I am full of service to another human being. I love that feeling, right? That feels phenomenal. I don't need from you because I'm in a position to love you, to understand you, to have compassion for you, to be of service to you. I'm in a good place, a good, good place. And when I go back to the lie, that's when trouble exists, you know. So today I can be restored to sanity. And the other piece that I ask myself is, what's my relationship ideal? Like, how do I want to show up for this person? And with that, I'll pass. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Wendy M. Tony Ann A., followed by Laura C.
Good morning, everybody. This is Tony Ann A. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Montclair, New Jersey. Just want to say welcome to all the newcomers on the line. When I start to read this chapter in the beginning, well, I need to remember, first of all, that I play the role of the husband. So I am the addict in the chapter. And it's going to be looking at how my behaviors as the addict has affected the other people in my life. I've heard it said in the rooms that there's only two types of wreckage we create in this program. Well, not before we get into this program. There's only two types of wreckage I come in with, and that's finance and romance. And I also believe that water seeks its own level. So as an addict, the people that I attract are other people that are addicts. Water seeks its own level. I look to be with people that are like me. And so, you know, I had a relationship in my life. I was married, and we were like two pieces in a puzzle. We fit together perfectly. Of course we did, because I was an addict, and this person was attracted to an addict. So when the puzzle changed, as I recovered and the situation in our relationship changed, and we no longer fit together anymore because I was playing a different role. And my family didn't understand the role that I was playing now because that's not the role that I had been my whole life. So there's a long period, it says after step 12, there's a long period of reconstruction ahead for us. And that's what happens in my relationships. But the good news is that because water does seek its own level, the healthier I get, the healthier I now attract, the healthier I now give off. And so this is a program of attraction, not promotion. There may be people in my life that are unhealthy, and I can't really effectuate any change in them by telling them about it or trying to get them to be better. But what happens is as they watch me change and as they see my life change, the way that I'm living becomes attractive. And then slowly by little, the people in my life, I start to hear different things. Like my boyfriend uses the word higher power now. I hear different lingo being echoed back to me because that's what I'm talking. And that's the beautiful hope that this program gives to me. That maybe just because relationships are not good now, as I recover, things do get better. Things do get restored and miracles can happen. Even the relationships that I thought would have to be thrown away can also be restored because I am being restored and I attract healthier. And thank you very much. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Tony Ann A. We have 5 minutes left, Laura C. and Bonnie M. If you'd each take about 2.5 minutes, that'll work. Thank you. Laura C.
Hi there. This is Laura T.
Oh, T.
That's okay. It rhymes. So, yeah, what a great chapter, and it reminds us that relationships often mirror the food, right? We come into program thinking food is the problem, and then we might get abstinent and think relationships are a problem. Oh, it's those other people triggering us, right? But when we get deeper into the steps and we live in them every day, we get to see that those character defects, they kind of manifest themselves the way food did, and how we were using food, we use people and project onto them. And when we turn it over to our higher power, we get to relate to people in a new way, and not that we set out to change them, because if we do, we very quickly find out that doesn't work, right? The big book tells us don't pray for selfish ends. It doesn't work. Same with people. We don't go into relationships anymore seeking to change the other person because we know it's not about them. And so this program provides a way for all of our life areas to heal, finances, relationships, everything, even though that might not be our goal when we set out, but our goal really, we get a daily reprieve based on our spiritual fitness, you know, and that means spreading the word, getting on meetings like these, doing our 10th and 11th steps with sponsors, all of that. So with that, I pass. Do we leave contact info now or later?
Later. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And Bonnie M., she cut it short, so you have 3 minutes.
Hi, this is Bonnie M. I am from Arizona. Thank you for your service, Mo, and welcome to newcomers. God, I feel like I could write a book on this because I know that not just my recovery, but I was put on diet pills at 14 years old, and from then on until I got into program, which was in my 40s, I mean, I went from one diet to the next. And I know that I drove the people that I lived with absolutely crazy and my friends as well. And, you know, I have a daughter that I remember her telling me that I put her on a diet at a very young age. And I don't have a memory of doing that, but I have a memory of having her help me cook certain things that I was to eat. But what ended up happening is that I even had one couple that stopped inviting me to parties and calling me a snob and basically telling me I was too good for them because, their parties were all about food and booze, and I didn't either. Periodically, from time to time, and this is why I was on the diet mentality. When I quit drinking, I totally quit drinking, but with food, I just went back and forth for years. And then by the time I got into program, to others, it still looked like another diet. and in the beginning it really was. So, you know, how could they be comfortable with all the changes that I had made in my life? And I think what did it, what started to turn it around, and there's still people that are uncomfortable with me because I now live in a community that is all about food and booze, and I eat differently, and I don't really talk about it. But I know they notice, and I know they don't understand, and if I get asked, I just say, you know, that I have an eating disorder and this is what I have to do, and nobody really questions it. But I do notice I don't get invited over to people's houses for dinner a lot. And so I know that to some degree it affects them. And I will say that in the beginning, the people I picked to be around me were people that were compulsive overeaters. And so I could, you know, I had comfort in what I did. And so why wouldn't I have discomfort? And when I started to take care of myself. And I love this program. I wouldn't change it for the world. And, you know, I hope to God I just keep learning and growing. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Bonnie M. Perfect timing. I would like to thank all those who shared and for those who gave service, Kelly F., Carol H., Sherry KB, John K., and Terry H. standing in the wings. And I will now ask John K. to please read from the Big Book, page 164, and we'll follow that by the Serenity Prayer. John K.
Thanks, Mo. This is John Kiernan, recovered compulsive overeater in Los Angeles. Great meeting this morning. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.